Chapter 31. The People's Republic of Wales.
Ironically, without the efficient and violent crushing of the simultaneous Pontypool, Cardiff and Newport risings in 1839, Wales might never have been a republic at all. Under pressure from landowners and a public outcry at the killing of 236 unarmed Welsh men and women, the Chartists managed to push the government to early reform of the parliamentary system. Buoyed by success and well represented in the House, they succeeded in securing Welsh Home Rule following the 8-month Great Strike of 1847. In 1854, under the leadership of John Frost, Wales declared its independence. England, weighed down with troubles in the Crimea and Ireland, saw no good reason to argue with a belligerent and committed Welsh assembly. Trade links were good, and devolution, coupled with an Anglo-Welsh non-aggression treaty, was passed the following year. From Zephania Jones's Wales, Birth of a Republic. When the Anglo-Welsh border was closed in 1965, the A4 from Chepstow to Abertawe became an access corridor through which only businessmen or truck drivers were allowed to pass, either to conduct trade in the city or to pick up goods from the docks. On either side of the Welsh A4, there were razor wire fences to remind visitors that straying from the designated route was not permitted. Abertawe was considered an open city, a free trade zone. Tax was low and trade tariffs almost non-existent. Bowden and I drove slowly into the city. The glassy towers and global banking institutions that lined the coast, obvious testament to a free trade philosophy that, while profitable, was not enthusiastically promoted by all the Welsh people. The rest of the Republic was much more reserved and traditional. In places, the small nation had hardly changed at all over the past 100 years. "What now?" asked Bowden, as we parked in front of the Goliath First National Bank. I patted the briefcase Braxton had given me the night before. He had told me to use the contents wisely. The way things were going, this was about the last chance we had before Goliath stepped in. "We get a lift into Merthyr."
"You wouldn't suggest it unless you had a plan."
"I wasn't wasting my time when I was in London, Bowden. I got a few favours up my sleeve. This way." We walked up the road, past the bank and into a side street that was lined with shops dealing in banknotes, medals, coins, gold and books. We squeezed past the traders, who conversed mostly in Welsh, and stopped outside a small antiquarian bookshop whose windows piled high with ancient volumes of forgotten lore. Bowden and I shared an anxious look, and, taking a deep breath, I opened the door and we entered. A small bell tinkled at the back of the shop, and a tall man with a stoop came out to greet us. He looked at us suspiciously from between a shock of grey hair and a pair of half-moon spectacles. But the suspicion turned to a smile when he recognised me.
"Thursday Bach," he murmured, hugging me affectionately.
"What brings you out this way? Not all the way to Abertawe to see an old man, surely?"
"I need your help, Di," I said softly. "Help like I've never needed before." He must have been following the news broadcasts because he fell silent. He gently took an early volume of R.S. Thomas out of the hands of a prospective customer, told him it was closing time, and ushered him out of the bookshop before he had time to complain. "This is Bowden Cable," I explained as the bookseller bolted the door. "He's my partner. If you can trust me, you can trust him. Bowden, this is Jones, the manuscript, my Welsh contact."
"Ah,"
said the bookseller, shaking Bowden's hand warmly.
"Any friend of Thursday's is a friend of mine. This is Halewyn the Book," he added, introducing us to his assistant, who smiled shyly.
"Now, young Thursday, what can I do for you?"
I paused.
We need to get to Merthyr Tydvil. The bookseller laughed explosively. Tonight, I added. He stopped laughing and walked behind the counter, tidying absently as he went.
Your reputation precedes you, Thursday. They tell me you seek Jane Eyre. They say you have a good heart and have faced wickedness and lived.
What else do people say?
The darkness walks in the valleys,
interrupted Halewyn, with a good deal of doom in her voice.
Thank you, Halewyn, said Jones.
The man you seek.
And the Rhondda has lain in shadow these past few weeks,
continued Halewyn, who obviously hadn't finished yet.
That's enough, Halewyn, said Jones more sternly. There are some new copies of Cold Comfort Farm that need to be dispatched to Llandod,
Halewyn walked out with a pained expression.
What about...
I began.
And the milk is delivered sour from the cow's udders,
called Halewyn from behind a bookshelf.
And the compasses in Merthyr have all gone mad these past few days.
Take no heed of her, explained Jones apologetically. She reads a lot of books. But how can I help you? Me, an old bookseller with no connections.
An old bookseller with Welsh citizenship and free access across the border doesn't need connections to get where he wants to go.
Wait a moment, Thursday back. You want me to take you to Merthyr?
I nodded. Jones was the best and last chance I had, all rolled into one. But he wasn't as happy with the plan as I thought he might be.
And why would I want to do that?
He asked sharply.
You know the punishment for smuggling. You want to see an old man like me and my days in a cell on Skokholm. You ask too much. I'm a crazy old man, not a stupid one.
I had thought he might say this. If you help us, I began, reaching into my briefcase, I can let you have... this. I placed the single sheet of paper on the counter in front of him. Jones gave a sharp intake of breath and sat heavily on a chair. He knew what it was without close examination.
How? How did you get this?
He asked me suspiciously. The English government rates the return of Jane Eyre very highly, high enough to wish to trade. He leaned forward and picked up the sheet. There, in all its glory, was an early handwritten draft of I See the Boys of Summer, the opening poem in the anthology that would later become 18 Poems, the first published work of Dylan Thomas. Wales had been demanding its return for some time.
This belongs not to one man, but to the Republic, announced the bookseller slowly. It is the heritage.
Agreed, I replied. You can do with the manuscript what you will. But Jones, the manuscript, was not going to be swayed. I could have brought him Under Milk Wood and Richard Burton to read it, and he still wouldn't have taken us to Merthyr.
Thursday, you ask too much, he wailed. The laws here are very strict. The Hethlick of Rinach have eyes and ears everywhere.
My heart sank. I understand, Jones, and thanks.
I'll take you to Merthyr, Miss Next,
interrupted Halewyn, fixing me with a half-smile.
It's too dangerous, muttered Jones. I forbid it.
Hush, replied Halewyn.
Enough of that talk from you. I read adventures every day. Now I can be in one. Besides, the street lights dimmed last night. It was a sign.
We sat in Jones's parlour until it was dark, then spent a noisy and uncomfortable hour in the trunk of Halewyn the Book's Griffin 12 motor car. We heard the murmur of Welsh voices as she took us across the border, and we were pummeled mercilessly by the potholed road on the trip into Merthyr. There was a second checkpoint just outside the capital, which was unusual. It seemed that English troop movements had made the military edgy. A few minutes later, the car stopped and the trunk creaked open. Halewyn bade us jump out, and we stretched painfully after the cramped journey. She pointed the way to the Penderyn Hotel, and I told her that if we weren't back by daybreak, we wouldn't be coming. She smiled and shook our hands, wished us good luck, and headed off to visit her aunt. Hades was in the Penderyn Hotel's abandoned bar at that time, smoking a pipe and contemplating the view from the large windows. Beyond the beautifully lit Palace of Justice, the full moon had risen and cast a cool glow upon the old city, which was alive with lights and movement. Beyond the buildings were the mountains, their summits hidden in cloud. Jane was on the other side of the room, sitting on the edge of her seat, angrily glaring at Hades.
"Pleasant view, wouldn't you say, Miss Eyre?"
"It pales when compared to my window at Thornfield, Mr. Hades," replied Jane in a restrained tone. "While not the finest view, I had learned to love it as an old friend, dependable and unchanging. I demand that you return me there forthwith."
"All in good time, dear girl. All in good time. I mean you no harm. I just want to make a lot of money. Then you can return to your Edward."
"Greed will get the better of you, I think, sir," responded Jane evenly. "You may think it will bring you happiness, but it will not. Happiness is fed by the food of love, not by the stodgy diet of money. The love of money is the root of all evil."
Acheron smiled.
"You are so dull, you know, Jane, with that puritanical streak. You should have gone with Rochester when you had the chance, instead of wasting yourself with that drip, St. John Rivers."
"Rivers is a fine man," declared Jane angrily. "He has more goodness than you will ever know."
The telephone rang, and Acheron interrupted her with a wave of his hand. It was Delamere, speaking from a phone box in Swindon. He was reading from the Mole's classified section.
"Lop-eared rabbits will be available soon to good homes," he quoted down the line.
Hades smiled and replaced the receiver. The authorities, he thought, were playing ball after all. He motioned to Felix Eight, who followed him out of the room, dragging a recalcitrant Jane with him. Bowden and I had forced a window in the dark bowels of the hotel and found ourselves in the old kitchen, a damp and dilapidated room packed with large food preparation equipment.
"Where now?" hissed Bowden.
"Upstairs. I would expect them to be in a ballroom or something."
I snapped on a flashlight and looked at the hastily sketched plans. Searching for the real blueprints would have been too risky, with Goliath watching our every move, so Victor had drawn the basic layout of the building from memory. I pushed open a swing door, and we found ourselves on the lower ground floor. Above us was the entrance lobby. By the glimmer of the streetlights that shone through the dirty windows, we made our way carefully up the water-stained marble staircase. We were close. I could sense it. I pulled out my automatic, and Bowden did the same. I looked up into the lobby. A brass bust of E. Broad Ulyanov sat in pride of place in the large entrance hall opposite the sealed main doors. To the left was the entrance to the bar and restaurant, and to the right was the old reception desk. Above us, the grand staircase swept upstairs to the two ballrooms. Bowden tapped me on the shoulder and pointed. The doors to the main lounge were ajar, and a thin sliver of orange light shone from within. We were about to make a move when we heard footsteps from above. We pushed ourselves into the shadows and waited, breath bated. From the upstairs floor, a small procession of people walked down the broad marble staircase. Leading the way was a man I recognized as Felix Eight. He held a candelabra aloft with one hand,
and clasped a small woman by the wrist with the other. She was dressed in Victorian nightclothes and had a great coat draped across her shoulders. Her face, although resolute, also spoke of despair and hopelessness. Behind her was a man who cast no shadows in the flickering light of the candles. Hades. We watched as they entered the smoking lounge. We quickly tiptoed across the hall floor and found ourselves at the ornate door. I counted to three and we burst in.
Thursday, my dear girl, how predictable.
I stared. Hades was sitting in a large armchair, smiling at us. Mycroft and Jane were looking dejected on a chaise longue, with Felix VIII behind them, holding two machine pistols trained on Bowden and me. In front of them all was the prose portal. I cursed myself for being so stupid. I could sense Hades was here. Did I suppose he could not do the same with me?
"Drop your weapons, please," said Felix VIII.
He was too close to Mycroft and Jane to risk a shot. The last time we met, he had died as I watched. I said the first thing that popped into my head. "Haven't I seen your face somewhere before?" He ignored me.
"Your guns, please."
"And let you shoot us like dodos? No way. We're keeping them." Felix VIII didn't move. Our weapons were by our side, and his were pointing straight at us. It wouldn't be much of a contest.
"You seem surprised that I was expecting you," said Hades with a slight smile.
"You could say that."
"The stakes have changed, Miss Next. I thought my 10 million ransom was a lot of money, but I was approached by someone who would give me 10 times that for your uncle's machine alone."
Mycroft shuffled unhappily. He had long ago ceased to complain, knowing it to be useless. He now looked forward only to the short visits he was permitted to Polly. "If that is the case," I said slowly, "then you can return Jane to the book." Hades thought for a minute.
"Why not? But first, I want you to meet someone."
A door opened to the left of us, and Jack Shit walked in. He was flanked by three of his men, and they were all carrying plasma rifles. The situation, I noted, was on the whole less than favourable. I muttered an apology to Bowden, then said, "Goliath, here in Wales."
"No doors are closed to the corporation, Miss Next. We come and go as we please."
Shit sat down on a faded red upholstered chair and pulled out a cigar. "Siding with criminals, Mr. Shit. Is that what Goliath does these days?"
"It's a relativist argument, Miss Next. Desperate situations require desperate measures. I wouldn't expect you to understand. But listen, we have a great deal of money at our disposal, and Acheron is willing to be generous in the use of Mr. Next's notable invention."
"And that is?"
"Ever seen one of these?" asked Shit, waving the stubby weapon he held at us both.
"It's a plasma rifle."
"Correct. A one-man portable piece of field artillery, firing supercharged quanta of pure energy. It will cut through a foot of armor plate at 100 yards. I think you will agree it is the high ground for land forces anywhere."
"If Goliath can deliver," put in Bowden.
"It's a mite more complicated than that, Officer Cable," replied Shit. "You see, it doesn't work. Almost $1 billion of funding, and the bloody thing doesn't work. Worse than that, it has recently been proved that it will never work. This sort of technology is quite impossible."
"But the Crimea is on the brink of war," I exclaimed angrily. "What happens when the Russians realize that the new technology is all bluff?"
"But they won't," replied Shit. "The technology might be impossible out here,
but it isn't impossible in there. He patted the large book that was the prose portal and looked at Mycroft's genetically engineered bookworms. They were on rest and recuperation at present in their goldfish bowl. They had just digested a recent meal of prepositions and were happily farting out apostrophes and ampersands. The air was heavy with them. Chit held up a book whose title was clearly visible. It read, The Plasma Rifle in War. I looked at Mycroft, who nodded miserably.
That's right, Miss Next.
Chit smiled and tapped the cover with the back of his hand.
In here, the plasma rifle works perfectly. All we have to do is open the book with the prose portal, bring out the weapons and issue them. It's the ultimate weapon, Miss Next.
But he wasn't referring to the plasma rifle. He was pointing to the prose portal. The bookworms responded by belching out large quantities of unnecessary capitalizations.
Anything that the human imagination can think up, we can reproduce. I look at the portal as less of a gateway to a million worlds, but more like a three-dimensional photocopier. With it, we can make anything we want. Even another portal. A handheld version. Christmas every day, Miss Next.
More death in the Crimea. I hope you can sleep well at night, Chit.
On the contrary, Miss Next, Russia will roll over and piss over itself when it witnesses the power of Stonk. The Tsar will permanently cede the peninsula to England, a new Riviera.
Won't that be nice?
Nice? Sun lounges and high-rise hotels, built on land that will be demanded back half a century from now. You're not solving anything, Chit, merely delaying it. When the Russians have a plasma rifle of their own, then what? Jack Chit was unrepentant.
Oh, don't worry about that, Miss Next. I'll charge them twice what I'll charge the English government.
Hear, hear, put in Hades, who was deeply impressed by Chit's total absence of scruple so far.
$100 million for the portal Thursday, added Hades excitedly. And a 50% cut on everything that comes out of it.
A lackey for the Goliath Corporation, Acheron. That doesn't sound like you at all.
Hades' cheek quivered, but he fought it, answering, Out of small acorns, Thursday.
Chit looked at him suspiciously. He nodded to one of his men, who levelled a small anti-tank gun at Hades.
Hades, the instruction manual.
Please, pleaded Mycroft. You're upsetting the worms. They're starting to hyphenate.
Shut up, Mycroft, snapped Chit. Hades, please, the instruction manual.
Manual, my dear chap?
Yes, Mr. Hades. Even you will not be impervious to my associate's small artillery piece. You have Mycroft's manual for the portal and the poem in which you have imprisoned Mrs. Next. Give them to me.
No, Mr. Chit. Give me the gun.
But Chit didn't flicker. The power that had stolen Snood and countless other people's reason had no effect on Chit's dark soul. Hades' face fell. He had not come across someone like Chit before. Not since the first Felix, anyhow. He laughed.
You dare to double-cross me? Sure I do. If I didn't, you'd have no respect from me, and that's no basis for a workable partnership.
Hades dodged in front of the prose portal.
And to think we were all getting along so well, too, he exclaimed,
placing the original manuscript of Jane Eyre back into the machine and adding the bookworms, who settled down, stopped farting, belching, and hyphenating, and got to work.
Really, continued Hades, I expected better from you, I must say. I almost thought I'd found someone who could be a partner.
But you'd want it all, Hades, replied Chit. Sooner or later,
And most probably sooner.
True. Very true.
Hades nodded to Felix Eight, who immediately started shooting. Bowden and I were directly in his line of fire. There was no way he could miss. My heart leaped, but strangely the first bullet slowed and stopped in midair 3 inches from my chest. It was the initial volley of a deadly procession that snaked lazily all the way back to Felix Eight's weapon, its muzzle now a frozen chrysanthemum of fire. I looked across at Bowden, who was also in line for a slug. The shiny bullet had stopped a foot from his head, but he was not stirring. Indeed, the whole room was not stirring. My father, for once, had arrived at precisely the right moment.
"Have I come at a bad time?" asked Dad, looking up from where he was sitting at the dusty grand piano. "I can go away again if you want."
No, Dad, this is good. Real good," I muttered. I looked around the room. My father never stayed for longer than 5 minutes, and when he left, the bullets would almost certainly carry on to their intended victim. My eyes alighted on a heavy table, and I upended it, sending dust, debris, and empty leak-you-like containers to the floor.
"Have you ever heard of someone named Winston Churchill?" asked my father.
"No. Who's he?" I gasped as I heaved the heavy oak table in front of Bowden.
"Ah," said my father, making a note in a small book. "Well, he was meant to lead England in the last war, but I think he was killed in a fall as a teenager. It's most awkward.
Another victim of the French revisionists?" My father didn't answer. His attention had switched to the middle of the room, where Hades was working on the prose portal. Time, for men like Hades, rarely stood still.
"Oh, don't mind me," said Hades, as a shaft of light opened up in the gloom. "I'm just going to step inside until all this unpleasantness is over. I have the instruction manual and Polly, so we can still bargain."
"Who's that?"
asked my father. "Acheron Hades."
"Is it? I expected someone shorter."
But Hades had gone. The prose portal buzzed slightly and then closed after him.
"I've got some repairs to do," announced my father, getting up and closing his notebook. "Time waits for no man, as we say."
I just had time to duck behind a large bureau as the world started up again. The hail of lead from Felix Eight struck the heavy oak table I had maneuvered in front of Bowden, and the bullets that had been destined for me thudded into the wooden door behind where I had been standing. Within the space of 2 seconds, the room was full of gunfire as the Goliath operatives joined in, covering Jack Shit, who, perplexed that Hades had vanished in mid-sentence, was now beating a retreat to the door leading to the old Atlantic Grill. Mycroft threw himself to the floor, followed closely by Jane, as dust and debris was scattered about the room. I bellowed into Jane's ear to stay where she was, as a shot came perilously close to our heads, knocking some moulding off the furniture and showering us with dust. I crawled around to where I could see Bowden exchanging shots with Felix Eight, who was now trapped behind an upended mock Georgian table next to the entrance of the Palm Court tea rooms. I had just loosed off a few shots at Goliath's men, who had rapidly dragged Shit from the room, when the firing stopped as quickly as it had begun. I reloaded.
"Felix Eight," I shouted. "You can still surrender. Your real name is Danny Chance. I promise you we will do all we can to..."
There was a strange gurgling noise, and I peeked around the back of the sofa. I thought Felix Eight had been wounded, but he hadn't. He was laughing. His usually expressionless face was convulsed with mirth. Bowden and I exchanged quizzical looks, but we stayed hidden.
"What's so funny?" I yelled.
"Haven't I seen your face somewhere before?" he giggled. "I get it now."
He raised his gun and fired repeatedly at us as he backed out of the lounge doors and into the darkness of the lobby outside. He had sensed his master's escape and had no more work to do here. "Where's Hades?"
said Bowden. In Jane Eyre, I replied, standing up. Cover the portal, and if he returns, use this. I handed him the anti-tank weapon as Shit, alerted to the end of the gunfire, returned. He appeared at the door to the bar.
Hades.
In Jane Eyre, with the instruction manual. Shit told me to surrender the prose portal to him. Without the instruction manual, you've got nothing, I said. Once I have Hades out of Thornfield and have returned my aunt to Mycroft, you can have the manual. There is no other deal. That's it. I'm taking Jane back with me now. I turned to my uncle. Mycroft, send us back to just before Jane comes out of her room to put out the fire in Rochester's bedroom. It will be as if she had never left. When I want to come back, I'll send a signal. Can you do that? Shit threw up his arms.
What sweet madness is this? He cried.
That's the signal, I said. The words sweet madness. As soon as you hear them, open the door immediately.
Are you sure you know what you're doing?
Asked Bowden as I helped Jane to her feet. Never been more certain. Just don't turn the machine off. Much as I enjoy the book, I've no desire to stay there forever. Shit bit his lip. He had been outmaneuvered. His hand, such as it was, would have to be played upon my return. I checked that my gun was still loaded, took a deep breath, and nodded to Jane, who smiled back eagerly. We grasped each other's hands tightly and stepped through the doorway.